Okay, going on. Beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 103C, page 362, the Gemini chapter. So, from certain angles, these three planets, the Earth, Venus, Mercury, the Gemini planets, are related to the personality of our planetary logos, the Earth, the planetary vital body. And there's also a place in esoteric astrology where we're discussing Earth and the Earth and Pluto, and we understand that Earth, Pluto, etheric or vital, well, maybe just Earth, Pluto, maybe that might give us enough. I see that this may not emerge for me the way I wanted to. Smoke, Hades, smoke, Pluto. Well, there's one place where Pluto smokes, so here it is. Ah, there it is. Two of the non-sacred planets, Mars and Pluto, function in connection with the sacral center, Mars, and the solar plexus, Pluto. This is not the reference. This is not the reference. There is a reference which brings Earth in relation to the etheric body of man. I wonder maybe if I'm not looking at it. But I feel it's very close to here. But perhaps I'll just have to leave it to you. Two of the non-sacred planets, the Earth and the Moon, are connected with two centers which in the highly evolved man are not of dominating importance. Aha, the spleen. Receiving pranic emanations from the planet on which we live, this is it. And concerned with the etheric and physical bodies and their physical relations. So that's Earth. Earth related to the spleen and to the pranic and to prana, Earth prana. And to the physical emanations, and then the other one, a center in the chest related to the thymus gland. And I suppose that may be the Moon. So he's giving some pretty obscure relations here of some of the planets, and you know, we are being reminded that the Earth is related, particularly in the personality of the planetary logos, to the vital body. And it's the absorption of Earth prana and also solar prana which is going to make of an individual a vital factor on the face of the Earth. Venus, interestingly enough, is related to the planetary astral body. Of course, more than that as well. Because Venus is related to the causal body, I suppose, of the planet. Well, it's certainly related to the causal body of the human being. The planetary astral body, Venus has a very strong ray 6 connected with it. It's strong ray 6. And as the solar plexus of the solar logos, as far as I can see, Sirius 2 has the same type of ray 6, and Sirius is related not only to the cosmic mental plane, but to the cosmic astral plane. It's a planet involved with Kamma Manus, and its reflection, Venus, is also involved with Kamma Manus. So the Kamma Manasic vehicle, or the two vehicles functioning together which produce Kamma Manus, is coming under Venus. It's a lesser planet mentally than Mercury, which from a monadic point of view has one of the mental rays as far as I can understand. Mercury, the planetary mind. So, you know, the planetary vital body, where is it really? Is it only systemic, or also the four ethers on the cosmic physical plane? Is Venus related to the cosmic astral plane? Is somehow Mercury related to the cosmic mental plane? This is the question. certainly it's related to the mind of man, the concrete mind. Is Mercury related to the cosmic mental plane? It's certainly related to the mental permanent atom of the human being. So, he's speaking of the personality of the planetary logos, but the personality of the planetary logos is not confined to the cosmic physical plane. Let's see, put this down. The personality of the planetary logos is not confined to the cosmic physical plane. So we're talking about cosmic planes here and vehicles of our planetary logos that are on cosmic planes. And I'd like here to just get a number 3 as it belongs, number 3. Okay, whoop. Maybe I can change that. Continue numbering, how's that? Continue numbering? No, that won't work. Let's just say numbering. And we'll go here to set numbering value. And number 3, and we'll try this. Yeah, all right. The Earth itself is, on a small scale, also an intermediary or a relating planet. Well, if it is related to solar systemic kundalini, then yes. That's one of the reasons it would be a relating planet. Also, it has about it the cross and the fourth ray and the fourth position. And its sole ray is the second ray, interestingly enough. Relationship comes in there. And it relates both Gemini and Sagittarius. That's true. The Earth itself is on a small scale also an intermediary or a relating planet. The Earth sometimes can be looked at as a mental unit within the solar logos. Sometimes I think there are multiple functions of any planet in relation to different chakric centers. And Venus to the monastic permanent atom. I'm recalling that the three powerful planets representing the three aspects at this time, though not ultimately, are Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus. And in this case, Saturn brings in the first aspect, Jupiter the second, as far as I can see, and Venus connected more with Manus and with the monastic permanent atom. Yeah, and Jupiter, I think, Jupiter has the heart center connection with our solar logos, and Saturn perhaps more a throat center connection, but in terms of the three aspects, Saturn definitely has a potent first ray. Venus doesn't really have a third ray, but it is related, I think, to the third aspect and to the intelligence aspect. So the Earth itself, on a small scale, is also an intermediary or relating planet because it is found ruling both Gemini and Sagittarius and is potent, therefore, only within this dual relationship. And I think what we have here is the idea of small scale, only in this regard. So this limited relationship is what is meant by small scale. Therefore, only within this line of this dual relationship is not related to any other signs. It is not the ruler of any other signs. Just think about Mercury. It's the ruler in one way or another of four signs, and so is Jupiter of four signs, and so is Venus of four signs, Taurus, Gemini, Libra, Capricorn, and so forth. And what about Mars? Mars in terms of three signs, Aries, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. Interesting that these sacred planets have a wider relationship. But let's see, what do we have for Saturn? We have only two signs. We have it, well, three in a way. It definitely rules Capricorn. It rules Aquarius initially in an orthodox sense, and it rules hierarchically in Libra. So that principle about sacred, non-sacred doesn't hold, but a number of these sacred planets, they have a fourfold relationship. Earth only has a connection of two. Okay, so only within the line of this dual relationship existing between this particular pair of opposites. In the Earth, a great balancing process is going forward between two great streams of cosmic energy. These are zodiacal, zodiacal energies, emanating the one from Sagittarius and the other from Gemini. These zodiacal energies are cosmic energies, clearly. Even the stars are, under certain conditions, they're considered cosmic. Even our sun is considered to be a cosmic entity. So, two great streams of cosmic energy, the one from Sagittarius, the other from Gemini. This condition, aided and influenced by Mercury and Venus, produces the somewhat unusual situation on our planet. Well, Mercury seems to be involved not only with Sagittarius, not only with Gemini, but with Sagittarius as well. We have a pair of opposites here. One pair of opposites just mentioned was that within the brothers themselves, within Gemini. But here is a larger pair of opposites, and it's involved with the individualization process, in a way, creating of the fourth kingdom under Mercury, the monastic kingdom, through the intervention of the solar angels related to Venus. But it's also involved with the liberation of man from the animal influence. So this condition produces a unique, somewhat unusual condition situation on our planet. Excuse me for slurring my words. I think I've been at this a little bit long. Sometimes I stop and sometimes I just go on. Anyway, Mars is involved because Mars is the animal and Mercury, Venus, release from the animal nature. In a way, releasing from Sagittarius. So Sagittarius at first has a lot of the animal nature. Later, of course, it's a much higher influence. But the animal aspiration and yearning for a higher life basically is induced by the Sagittarian Martian connection. The lunar lords yearn, as it were, for a higher state. The elementals seek to become devas. The animal seeks to become man. So a somewhat unusual condition exists on our planet. I guess we're getting a lot about planetary history in terms of certain signs. Venus, now here comes one of those fourfold interplays. Venus also establishes an interplay between Taurus, Gemini, Libra, and Capricorn. We're starting, you know, we're in the Gemini chapter, so that's the esoteric ruler, Venus of Gemini, which again, because the Earth is one of the rulers of Gemini, and much and close related to Taurus, really, produces the desperate conflict of the imprisoned soul upon the astral plane, which characterizes our planetary lives. You kind of wonder whether the astral body of our planetary logos is not cosmically in a somewhat similar position. There's a lot of conflict going on within that astral body compared to the amelioration of conflict which has already occurred in relation to the astral body of Venus. So this interplay, this is one of those sentences which also causes me to think Taurus, desire, Gemini, conflict, the dualities conflicting, Libra, the seeking of peace, but the constant swinging of the pairs of opposites. But finally, they're balancing. And Capricorn bringing the victory, the one who crosses the water, the one who is not anymore subject to the waves and fluctuations and storms within the waters. We can't seem to get loose from these pulls. That's the desperate conflict. We cannot seem to be loose of these pulls between the higher and the lower until victory in Capricorn. And there's also a kind of victory in Scorpio, a kind of triumph. Well, there's triumph and then there's victory. I wonder which is higher. Maybe victory is higher. Triumph, a more temporary state. Capricorn is fulfilling what has begun in Scorpio. It consummates the Scorpionic effort. In the tests of Scorpio are consummated in the trials of Capricorn and the victory there found. So this sentiency of Venus, this camomanassic state, is subject to a desperate conflict from which it cannot release itself unless Venus in its soul aspect begins to become so powerful that its magnetism weans one away from the lower Martian desires. Interestingly, Mars is exalted in Capricorn, so at first Capricorn is not used in a high way by man, but to produce conflict. When we can give up our desires for the lower three worlds, which is what the Buddha tried to teach us to do, then we're on our way to releasing ourselves from the lower pull. Gemini will move towards Libra, and the two horns of Taurus will become eventually the one horn of Capricorn. There will be the single eye, and the opposites will be resolved. There is a progression here. So we could question ourselves, to what degree are we, as aspirants and disciples, involved in the desperate conflict of the imprisoned by its own desire, imprisoned by the desire for lesser things of a material nature. And when we talk about material, we do have to think about materiality in terms of the planetary logos, which involves all the 18 subplanes of the moon, all the elemental life. This characterizes our planetary life, and we human beings are part of that. Is the planetary logos in some way imprisoned in his own upon the astral plane? And, well, let's just say, from this perspective, the planetary logos is still not an initiate of the second degree. He's moving towards his second cosmic initiation. I do believe it seems clear that the logos of Venus has achieved this and is working on his third. You know, I gather this from page 384 of Cosmic Fire. And yes, then, the planetary logos is to a degree imprisoned on the cosmic astral plane. And we, in relation to our lesser systemic astral plane, reflect that imprisonment. And the Buddha was really trying to help us be released by elevating our desires, not the lower desires of Taurus, but the desire for the greater light, because the Buddha is the Lord of Light. So we're dealing then with the light that reveals suchness or true reality. We're dealing with a waxing of the higher Geminian brother. We're dealing with the divine love and understanding which comes in with Libra, and the final triumph and entry into the unifying light sublime in Capricorn. Capricorn does, at first, we know, have emotional control. And then the moon is in detriment there, the moon representing the emotions here, and the emotions will not be allowed to control because Capricorn crosses the water. And the sublime light of Venus will infuse the astral plane. Even before the third degree, Venus is involved in the illumining of the astral plane and giving us a true sense of values in relation to the astral plane. So we desire what is truly valuable and not just the leftovers of the previous solar system. So, you know, as I pointed out, and it's a good mental exercise for anybody interested in esoteric astrology, just take the planet and see what constellations are brought into relationship by the relationship of each one of those constellations to the particular planet. And I think I've gone through, you know, that idea. Uranus is an interesting one. In a way, it relates to Aries, Leo, Libra, Aquarius, Neptune, you know, through the process of veiling, relates Cancer, Virgo, and Aquarius. Pluto, in its nominal rulership of Scorpio, and its kind of connection with Aries, you could say it relates Aries, Scorpio, and Pisces. But those types of rulerships regarding Pluto are very, I'm talking about different levels altogether there. So really, it only relates Scorpio and Pisces. When it comes to Jupiter, we have the relationship between Sagittarius, Pisces, Aquarius, and Virgo. As I say, Saturn, pretty much just Libra and Capricorn, but you can throw in Aquarius there because of the strong association of Saturn with the Orthodox rulership of Aquarius, and so forth. And then, you know, when you see these constellations related to each other, just ask yourself, what are they doing together? Why do they form a unit? What do they mean to the individual on Earth when their energies, constellational, are mediated through the planet that relates those constellations? What do they bring to Earth? You can certainly see Jupiter bringing great expansion and fulfillment of the second aspect of divinity, you know, working through Sagittarius, expansion of consciousness, working through salvation and helpfulness in Pisces, working to promote universality in Aquarius, working to make our planet a sacred planet by the emergence of the planetary soul on the second ray in Virgo. So it's the emergence of that part of the soul of our planetary logos, which is the Christ consciousness in a planetary sense. There are all manner of ways of relating the constellations via the planets and esoteric astrology with its additional planetary rulerships gives us the sense of much wider relations than may be possible in the Orthodox personal astrology. These fourfold influences and relationships produce the minor initiations of the astral plane which ever precede the major initiations in Capricorn. And this requires an analysis. We have told that on the astral plane there are four initiations of fire, earth, air, and water. These initiations seem to precede the second degree. Sometimes all the five initiations are called major, initiations. Usually major usually means from the third degree onward, but sometimes the major monastic initiations are considered to include one and two as well. The minor initiations of the astral plane, whichever precede the major initiations in Capricorn, in their turn prepared for in Scorpio. So major initiations can be considered 1 through 5, or they can be considered to be 3 through 7. And Scorpio usually is most powerful in initiations 1 and 2, but also powerful in 3. And the astral initiations of the astral plane might be found between initiations 2 and between 1 and 2, but might also extend to periods between 2 and 3. So there's been a study made on minor initiations occurring in relation to the unfoldment of the egoic petals, the hall of ignorance, and the petals of knowledge there, and also before even the birth of the Christ is occurring. There are two or more initiations of a quite minor kind, but significant, occurring before even the birth of the Christ. But what we seem to be talking about here are initiations which prepare us for true initiation in Capricorn. And Scorpio can accompany Capricorn in initiations. First initiation, Scorpio and Capricorn. Second initiation, Scorpio and Capricorn, but mostly Scorpio. Third initiation, Scorpio and Capricorn, but mostly Capricorn. So I think we can see how the overlapping may work. There's still a fair amount to be done on the astral plane between initiation 2 and 3, otherwise the human being would not be considered a hazard or a liability until he had passed the temptations in the desert. So where should we place these initiations? On the astral plane, perhaps between initiations 1 and 2, and maybe between 2 and 3. Let's take a closer look if we can. Well, here is a clarifying sentence, and I think it shows that the small initiations of the astral plane that we are talking about really are between the first and second degree, and are not found between the second and third. Four small initiations find their culmination in the initiation proper. These are the initiations on the emotional plane called respectively the initiations of earth, fire, water, and air, culminating in initiation the second. So here I think is the more definitive statement about where those lesser initiations can be found. Okay. So let us relate what we saw here. It's initiate letters on occult meditation 339. And the minor initiations of the astral plane, which relate to LOM 339. Now, here's the question. These fourfold influences and relationships produce the minor initiations of the astral plane, whichever precede the major initiations of Capricorn. Now, we know that the first five initiations are indeed ruled by Capricorn, and perhaps initiations beyond that point to a degree, because Capricorn at this time in relation to the Earth is the great sign of initiation, not yet Aries. So can DK be talking about the second initiation as a major initiation, because it is indicating the entrance or the entry into the stream, entering the stream, and it is a great dividing point, and from that point the initiation process proceeds rapidly. Can he mean that? Several things he can mean, because definitely the four initiations of the astral plane, if they are the same as here on Letters on Occult Meditation 339, are the earth, the fire, water, and air, and they precede the major initiations in Capricorn. So they're not going to be occurring before initiation number one. They culminating in initiation the second. That's when they are found. And you kind of wonder whether they can begin after, they must begin, I think, after the first initiation, because then the subduing of the mighty astral body is the major task. And if these are initiations, smaller ones on the astral plane, they have to do with the subduing of the astral body, which culminates in the second initiation. So these fourfold influences and relationships produce the minor initiations of the astral plane, which ever precede the major initiations in Capricorn, in their turn prepared for in Scorpio. Taurus, now he's going to deal with the way that Taurus, Gemini, Libra, and Capricorn are related, perhaps in producing this desperate conflict of the imprisoned soul upon the astral plane. Taurus pours the energy-stimulating desire via Venus onto our Earth. So a lower aspect of Venusian influence makes one desire what is pleasing, beautiful, agreeable, the desire of that which is pleasing, attractive, even if of a low nature. Venus is always the planet here, but different kinds of influences reach man at different stages of his evolutionary development. It seems that Taurus is coming first in this sequence. Though it doesn't mean that the Taurus-Venus relationship is always held to a lower factor. It can mean great illumination later on. Gemini via Venus awakens in humanity, which is the focal point of our planetary effort this time. You know, our planetary logos is going through a kind of fourth initiation, so the fourth kingdom is very pivotal. The sense of duality, which is the basic factor in the conflict between desire and spiritual will. So we might say desire rules the lower brother and spiritual will the higher. So when a conflict is being fought out in the spiritual sense, it is between that which desire craves and what spiritual will aligned with the plan and purpose demands. So there might just be unregulated desire for low things with no problem of conflict in the psyche about acquiring those desirable things until Gemini, which is one of the factors inducing conflict, steps into the picture and in a way opposes a higher magnetism to a lower magnetism. In Libra, this kind of pull, this pull between spiritual will and desire, or between higher values and lower values, let's call it that, between higher and lower values, this reaches a point of balance wherein the one who struggles, and that's ever the disciple in between, sees the issues clearly and achieves a desirable, you know, it's not desire anymore in the lower sense, a desirable point of equilibrium through the wise use of the Mercury-Venus mind. Libra is a third-ray constellation, in a sense, Mercury a third-ray planet. Venus is also involved as a ruler of Libra. So this is a, let's call it a kind of a balancing mind, which recognizes the need to give both sets of values their due. So Libra is so often trying to balance competing demands. Eventually, of course, the equilibrium has to be broken. So from rampant desire. Desire even, you know, for lower and agreeable things, agreeable to the form. We go into a stage of conflict where we feel there is a higher pull, but we're torn in the conflict, and there is an equilibrization of the conflict in Libra, a point of balance, and it seems perhaps that for a short time the struggle ceases, a point of stasis may be reached, but it's a balance or equilibrium which must be disturbed. So Mercury mediates between higher and lower values, perhaps sees the value of both, and Venus keeps the soul and personality in equilibrium with each other and mutually attracted to each other. Right. Then, ensuring the success of its final efforts in Capricorn. The final efforts of the soul wins. The soul dominates and wins the majority of in the energy balance is achieved by the soul in the fifth kingdom. So it is an interesting progress from rampant desire and real magnetic attraction to the world of form into a stage of fluctuating conflict between higher and lower poles, into a stage of equilibrizing this conflict so there is a just but temporary peace, and then into a final victory promoted by Scorpio on the way to Capricorn, the place of true victory and final trials. Final efforts made in Capricorn, and we can think of it as a sign of final efforts. You will note, therefore, how necessary it is to realize accurately the point in evolution of the soul. And why is this, you know? So we can judge of the effects of these constellations and Venus in the proper manner. We cannot hold these particular constellations in the particular sequence that we have been given here, because, as I say, you can have high or low effects in relation to any of these constellations, the earthbound soul in relation to Capricorn, the unbalanced fiery passion, and, you know, the constant pursuit of sex in Libra, and you can have all kinds of instability involved in Gemini, and a situation which is chaotic and ever-changing, and in which no true accomplishment can happen because of the instability of the situation. So there are positives and negatives connected with each of these constellations, but in terms of an archetypal sequence leading from desire to the triumph of spiritual will in Capricorn, we can see the pattern being laid out in this in these four signs and in the sequential mode in which they are presented to us for study. The three planets ruling and conditioning Gemini through outdrawn activity, though not through their own influence. Yes, outdrawn. They pull upon the influences of Gemini. They usually, when we talk about conditioning, we mean a superior influence imposing itself upon an inferior. These planets are inferior to the great lord of the constellation Gemini, but they condition the amount and quality of Gemini energy which can reach the Earth. That they condition. They condition the flow and the quality of Gemini energy which can get through to the Earth. So they are limiters and sort of transducers, I guess. They lower the extent of the energy that can be reached, and thus condition the constellation by conditioning its flow towards its receiver. So the three planets ruling and conditioning Gemini through outdrawn activity, though not through their own influence, are in this third sign effective in constituting this dual sign a working triplicity. There's always this interesting consideration of Gemini. Is it a two or is it a three? Is second ray involved? Yes. Or is third ray probably as well? But the activity aspect is so high in Gemini that it relates to the third aspect, does it not? So the dual sign becomes a working triplicity. Okay? It is the aid they give to our Earth, these ruling planets, which produces the appearance in form. Let us see about this. These are abstract matters. Appearance in form of the dual energies of the soul and the subjective psychic personality. Ponder on this. Well, I think we must. The three planets ruling and conditioning Gemini through outdrawn activity, not through their own influence. In other words, their own influence is not imposing itself upon Gemini, but is drawing forth certain types of Geminian activity, and only those types, are in this sign effective in constituting this dual sign a working triplicity. I suppose working in every aspect of the logoic personality, and as we have seen, conditioning the Earth, the vital body, Venus, the astral body, Mercury, the mental body, of our planetary logos, and also operating that way in relation to man. Constituting this dual sign of working triplicity, it is the aid they give to our Earth. Now, I suppose we're talking about the Mercury-Venus aid, and also the Geminian aid, which produces the appearance in form of the dual energies of soul and the subjective psychic personality. The psychic personality, this involves the subtle bodies, which are not truly subjective. So subtle bodies produce the psychic, sensitive, subjective personality as it responds to the energies of the true subjectivity. The soul is the true subjectivity. Responding to the true subjectivity. Ponder on this. So we have this opposition between soul and personality, and the Gemini and the two influences of Mercury and Venus are producing this kind of interplay between the energies of the soul, which is truly subjective, and the energies of the subtle bodies of the personality, sometimes called subjective, but not correctly called subjective. They are really objective to the soul. And there is the interplay here going on. We have kind of a triplicity here. We have a triplicity going on, a triplicity between soul, subjective nature, well, I shouldn't call it subtle, I'll call it subtle nature, and the physical apparatus indicated by Earth. But the real conflict is going on between the subtle vehicles and the soul. Triplicity. Okay. It is the energies of the fifth, fourth, and third rays pouring through Venus, Mercury, and the Earth, respectively, which are productive of the eternally recurring divine triplicity and its working and its work of releasing the soul from the influence of form. Now, the divine triplicity, what do we mean by that? There are the three aspects of divinity reflected in the three aspects of the personality, and we've already seen how that works in terms of Mercury relating to the mind, Venus to the astral nature or camomanasic nature, and the Earth to the vital and also physical nature. The eternal triplicity is something of a higher nature. It could be considered in a way perhaps the spiritual triad, which works to release through the soul itself from the influence of the subtle nature and the dense physical nature. Now, from another perspective, the divine triplicity can be considered a spirit, soul, and body of the three periodical vehicles. In a way, Mercury would represent the highest aspect, Venus the intermediary or soul aspect, and the Earth would represent the personality aspect. So we have an interplay going on between a duality, and that duality also becomes a triplicity. We also have to eventually resolve the triplicity back into a duality. We do this. You know, we have an interplay between spirit, soul, and body. Okay, what happens here with the three, excuse me, is that soul and personality become one thing, and hence a new duality is created. What was a triplicity becomes a duality again, and I wonder, you know, it strikes me here, when I looked at this, the plan of absorption, which goes into the retracting of our solar system, the final synthesis and reabsorption. I wonder if Earth and Venus do not, in a way, coalesce, even as the subtle principles of Earth and Venus coalesce, even as soul and personality must coalesce. It's as if the lower aspects represented by Earth have to disappear and be absorbed into the soul. And then a new interrelationship would occur between Mercury and Venus. I pointed this out earlier in the discussion of the threefold Antikarana. If we looked at this diagram, here it goes. Always have to find the cursor. If we look at this diagram, we see that the three parts here of the Antikarana could be represented respectively by Earth at the mental unit, Venus as a representation of the egoic nature, the egoic lotus, and Mercury here representing the spiritual triad in its lowest aspect. So this is a divine triplicity. Mercury is, in a way, then, conducting the first ray energy through the spiritual triad, and interestingly, Mercury is associated with the major first ray sign Aries. It's a conductor of the first ray in a secondary manner. Venus would conduct the essentially second ray energy of the egoic lotus, and Earth the essentially third ray energy of the personality, which is built around this mental unit. So this triangle right here, which is in a sense related to the three minds which have to unite, there are different ways of looking at those three minds, but okay, this is abstract mind, son of mind, and lower mind. They have to unite. We see a divine triplicity reflected in the bringing together of the three aspects of man: monad, triad, soul, personality. So that's another way of pondering on what DK is here saying. Obviously, these things admit of almost endless careful consideration, and what I can offer here is not the full depth of what could be offered by a greater mind or a master or someone who can see these things in fullness. So it is the energies of the fifth, fourth, and third rays pouring, respectively, through Venus, Mercury, and Earth, which are productive of the eternally recurring divine triplicity and its work of releasing the soul from the influence of form. And I think we can see how that antichoronic triangle is involved precisely in releasing the soul from the influence of form through the irradiation of the form by the soul and eventually by the monad triad. That release comes from the descent of the higher energies and from a major reorientation of earthly desires towards that which Venus and Mercury promise of the higher life, and which is given to man by his higher aspects, which are attuned with Venus and Mercury, given to man by his higher aspects. You know, I think this is interesting that the etheric body of man is ruled very much by Aquarius and by Gemini. Now, what about the etheric body of the planetary logos or the four cosmic ethers? Don't we think, this is coming to me now that I think it is a connection, don't we think that that cosmic etheric body or the cosmic ethers, buddhic, atmic, monadic, logoic planes, which are the cosmic ethers, are not only ruled by Aquarius, but since it is an etheric body concerned, are ruled by Gemini as well. And this would mean, the connection here. This would mean that the higher ethers are ruled not only by Uranus as the ruler of Aquarius, but by Mercury as the ruler of Gemini. Both of those signs, Gemini and Aquarius, have a connection with etheric nature, and the constellations are so high that they can certainly have a connection with the cosmic etheric body of our planetary logos and those cosmic ethers. In that case, Mercury indeed does conduct the first aspect of divinity and represents the spiritual triad. Venus always is representing the flower-like unfolding of the second aspect, consciousness on the higher mental plane. It's not yet really, I say, a Buddhic planet, even though within its nature, Buddhi is triumphing. And the Earth, very much connected with Earth-boundedness within the lunar elementals. If you think about the Moon, it belongs to the Earth. I mean, really. It's not like the Moon is really a separate planet. It's not. The Moon is an aspect of the Earth scheme. So whatever is lunitary is Terrian. Not Taurian, but Terrian, relating to the Earth. So if you consider that the permanent atom here, the lower part, the mental unit, is in a way ruled by fourfold Earth. And interestingly, the symbol for the mental unit is a cross with a circle. The symbol for Earth is a cross with a circle. You can see how Earth represents the third aspect of divinity. You can see this. And how it is these two higher aspects of soul and triad monad, you know, represented here by Mercury and here by Venus, that will redeem this lower type of response to the matter of the previous solar system, which has been so much stored within the planetary scheme of Earth, where it is to undergo redemption. Let's see what else we have here. We have considered the rays which directly affect our planet, the Earth, from Gemini, the fifth of Venus, the fourth of Mercury, the third of Earth itself, because the Earth vibration is potent. its qualities are potent within its own planetary nature and within the horoscopes of those who live upon the planet, which are focused through three ruling planets and which emanate from certain constellations. And these constellations let us review here, and then we'll have to undertake, that's all we have time for, review. With Mercury, we have Aries, Aries, Virgo, and Scorpio, and with Venus, we have a Taurus, Gemini, Libra, and Capricorn. And I suppose over here we have to also include Gemini as well. And with Earth, oh, how about a capital? We have Sagittarius and also Gemini. So these are the constellations which the rulers are bringing in to our particular planet. I think we have to stop there, really. I think it's time to perhaps move on to a new program, give myself just a little rest here. I think so. So let's call this the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 103C, page, as I always say, page something, page 363. Okay. 363 and beginning of EAA. We'll go to 104 now. A, page 363. And I think we have time to close with the great invocation after these three approximately 1 hour long programs. I think we'll do that. Okay. So, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we're into some very interesting stuff. It turns out that this Gemini chapter is really, quite extensive. And it's looking at cosmic relations and planetary relations, which have produced some of the major relationships upon our planet, and especially relationships of humanity to our planet and within itself and to wider realms. Subtle, subjective, and sometimes a little difficult to interpret, but we will offer the ideas such as we can and proceed, which I hope to do a little bit more today, going onward. We'll do that. Okay, friends, that's it for Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 103, and we'll get on to 104 as soon as may be possible.